The Celtics drop a tough one against the Clippers, which raises the question about Kemba Walker being the best player on a championship team. Also, Pat Beverly does not want to hear any comparisons to Marcus Smart. And I want rules changed, damn it. It's the Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go.
Right now, anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my Seas jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the Seas, that's the best way. Melly.
It's Thursday, and you're listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast, and I want to thank you for doing so. Appreciate you guys all taking this podcast along with you, whatever you're doing, wherever you're going, whatever you're going through. I'm excited and appreciative that you're making this podcast part of your daily routine. I'm John Corrales from MassLive.com here in Los Angeles, California, after a Boston Celtics loss 107-104 to the Los Angeles Clippers. It's a game where I feel like the Celtics proved that they should be in the conversation for amongst the NBA's best teams. That this game, the debut of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, to defend that team the way they did, to go out there for four quarters plus an overtime, and limit the Clippers in the ways that they did, and really lose because Patrick Beverly, who came into this game as a 19% three-point shooter, Patrick Beverly shot 4 of 5 from three in the fourth quarter and in overtime. That's a team that is worthy of being considered amongst the NBA's best. I think the reaction across the NBA will be the Celtics faced the best team in the NBA when you consider that they had finally Kawhi and PG on the floor at the same time. The Celtics took that team to overtime without Gordon Hayward and went in there, and it took an outrageous effort from a guy who wouldn't normally do this, and they almost won. So I think it's a positive. I know some of you might think, well, of course, John, think that's a positive. That's how it goes. John thinks everything is a positive. I'm a positive person. So, but the Celtics didn't do some things that they should have done. I mean, I'm a realist as well. Jason Tatum finished the game with 30 points, his first consecutive games as a Celtic with 25-plus points. 30 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 3 turnovers for Jason Tatum. The thing about Jason Tatum, and if we're going to talk about something negative, it's going to be the fourth quarter where he only got one shot. He made the only shot that he took in the fourth quarter. Obviously critical, because that was where LA made a comeback. In the third quarter, Jason Tatum was 5 of 7, 4 of 5 from three. He came out of the half hot. In the first half, he was, I think, kind of his old self a little bit. He was 1 of 5 in the second quarter. We saw Tatum kind of miss shots at the rim. I talked to some friends of mine at halftime, and we were just saying, like, oh, this is kind of old Tatum. He kind of stinks at the rim right now. But he came out in the third quarter and just kind of shut all of that talk up. 5 of 7, 4 of 5 from three. I mean, he was awesome in the third quarter. To not get that guy touches in the fourth quarter is kind of outrageous. That he played, first of all, that he played only 5:45 in the fourth quarter, I think is that's on Brad. And Brad, after the game, was talking about, like, well, he was saying, I wish I could do more. I wish I did more, because he wants to take responsibility. I mean, Tatum did play 40 minutes in this game when you consider the overtime. But a couple extra minutes, a little bit different usage for Jason Tatum might have been beneficial for the Celtics in this game. This is a game that was there for the taking. And I think if you're Brad Stevens in that moment, I don't know what he was thinking, but maybe you say, let's go for this win and sell out for this win. And you will have gotten wins in Phoenix. You will have gotten a win in Golden State. And then you will have gotten this win in Los Angeles. It's a 5-game road trip. Maybe you sacrifice a win in Denver or put yourself at lower odds because you don't know what's going to happen. Maybe you say, we're selling out for this win here. We're going to play Tatum extra. And we're just going to sit him against Denver because we don't want to ruin his season. Go all out, sell out, play him extra, an extra 3 minutes in the fourth quarter and give him the Denver game off. And if you come out of this trip 3-2, I'm happy with it. I think everybody's happy with that. You know, if Tatum played 43 minutes instead of 40 and then sat the next game, I think fans would be like, yeah, okay, I get that. But that's not how it went. And maybe some Tatum in the fourth quarter would have changed this. But it didn't. I thought the Celtics did a pretty good job defending for most of this game. One thing that they did in this game defensively is help off of Patrick Beverley. And whenever Kawhi was on the floor or Paul George was on the floor or both, along with Lou Williams, along with Montrezl Harrell, they basically said, we're going to help off Patrick Beverley and take our chances. And it worked for most of the game. In the fourth quarter, he got going. And it's proof that any NBA player can go out there, and when they're basically uncontested, they can hit shots from anywhere. We've seen Andre Drummond hit threes. We've seen Enes Kanter hit a bunch of threes in a row. Any guy can go out there and hit a bunch of threes in a row. And I can tell you, as a basketball player, that when you hit one and it feels good, that next one really, you know, you have an extra level of confidence. And it's an intangible thing. We live in this world of analytics and stats, and I believe in that. I'm not going to rail against that. But there's this unquantifiable thing that when you're a basketball player and you're out there and you're shooting, it feels so good. For example, Grant Williams was out there shooting pregame, and he hit, like, seriously, 15, 20 three-pointers in a row. He hasn't hit a three-pointer in his life in a game in the NBA. He hit, like, 15 or 20 in a row. I can see him out there saying, I'm in my bag right now. I feel good. When it's going, when you feel good, it just... it keeps on going. By the way, I got to apologize because my voice is really taking a beating right now. So if I sound gravelly or gross, I'm sorry. But Patrick Beverley got going in the fourth quarter and in overtime and hit clutch shots. Brad Stevens after the game said, you got to pick your poison. And they picked their poison, and it was Patrick Beverley, and it burned them. He got hot, and that's how it all shook out. He got hot, and the plan worked for a while, and then all of a sudden it didn't. And the Celtics ended up losers in this game. But I will say that the way this game went, it really just proves that the Celtics belong. They belong in that conversation. They belong in that mix. I don't know if they're going to come out of the East, but Milwaukee, Philly, throw Boston in that mix. You've got to throw Boston in that mix. And if you thought, hey, early on, yeah, the record might be a little bit bloated because of who they played, not anymore. I think they've shown enough that they're going to compete against the best of the best. Full strength versus full strength, Clippers versus Boston. Put them in a 7-game series. The Clippers will be favored, and they should be. But Boston won't roll over. Boston will make that a fight. Boston will give themselves a chance to win. And that's all you can ask of this team. A team that's not even constructed to win right now, which is really the most important thing that you got to consider with this Celtics team. They weren't even constructed to be a contender this year. And yet, here they are, kind of in the mix at the top of the East. Are they a contender to win a championship? Is there any scenario in which they would be favored to win a series against a Western Conference team without any injuries involved? No. But the fact that they're in that mix, that's impressive. That's a great job by them. Going to take a break, going to come back, going to talk about the reaction to this game where some people are saying, hey, maybe the Celtics are better when Kemba's not their best player. Also, my interaction with Pat Beverly in the locker room where he stared me down and did not like the question that I asked. That's next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Again, I have to apologize for my voice. I feel like it's late. It's my throat is. Everybody in the media room is sick and coughing, and so if I sound different or worse, then I apologize. Maybe I might need to take my own day off for the Friday podcast. I don't know. But for now, we soldier on, and we talk about Kemba Walker, who I think there's a reaction here to Kemba and his 4 of 17 shooting game where he did hit 3 of 9 from 3, but finished the game with 13 points. And I think a common reaction here is the Celtics or a championship team cannot win with Kemba Walker as your best player. There is a feeling that because he's smaller, you can game plan, and against certain matchups, he's not going to be effective. And there is some truth to him not being able to be effective against going up against bigger players. Brad Stevens had, a great quote after the game where he said, basically, I'm paraphrasing, Kemba made a great play. He made a great read. He cut to the he flared to the corner where he would normally cut some other direction. Against a normal person, that play would have worked. Kawhi's not normal. So in assessing whether Kemba can be effective against a team with the length that the Clippers have, one thing you have to take into account is that Kawhi is not normal. He's not a normal defender. And so the defenses that he faced were different. And you can say, well, Kemba didn't perform against this defense. Well, when they're at full strength, who will? That they're the title contenders for a reason. So the other thing you have to take into account is, would having Gordon Hayward make a difference in this game? Would having had Hayward throughout stretches in this game change how Kemba was defended? Having him on the floor instead of Grant Williams, having him on the floor instead of whomever else, Semi Ojeleye, who got a few minutes here. instead of Brad Wanamaker, who was very solid in this game. 4 of 8 shooting overall, 2 of 4 from three, 14 points. I mean, I'm certainly not going to shit on Brad Wanamaker, but having Hayward instead of Wanamaker, and if I'm an opposing team, I'm daring Wanamaker to make that shot, I'm staying a little closer to Gordon Hayward. And situation matters, teammates matter. Can Kemba do certain things that Kawhi can or Paul George can? No, of course not. But to say that he can't be the best player on the best team, we don't know if that's true, because he was on the damn Charlotte Hornets. And now he's on a team where, you know, they just lost their third game of the season. Only 3 games that they've lost. They're 11-3. And suddenly, because of this one game, we're saying, oh, I don't know if Kemba could be the best player on the team. Who was the best player on the team during a 10-game winning streak? Wasn't it Kemba? Wasn't it Kemba's fourth quarter performances that were the best, that made him the best player on this team? I'm not saying that there isn't merit to the debate. I'm not sitting here saying, like, Kemba is an MVP candidate or anything. Like, I understand that Kemba, being a third-team All-NBA guy, makes him an extraordinarily good player, but not at that elite level of first-teamers. I understand that that's not the case. But to say that he can't be the best player, it depends on the team. It depends on the matchups. It depends on a lot of things. So this one game, while yes, it highlights the deficiency in Kemba's game, he's smaller, he's trying to drive to the rim, he kept getting blocked. Like, that is for sure a thing that happens. But different circumstances with different teammates on the floor, Gordon Hayward for sure. The ability for a coach to game plan and adjust in a series, a lot of different factors go into all of this. So I understand the discussion. I'm not saying it's invalid, but those of you who are making the argument that Kemba can't be the best player on a championship team based on this game, please understand that you have incomplete data, that Gordon Hayward wasn't involved, that a lot of other things factor into this, and that it's possible that he can be. It's possible. And frankly, when it comes to the Celtics, maybe a bunch of guys can be equally good. And so does Jason Tatum need to be your best player? Maybe Jason Tatum has to be your best player in a certain series, and Kemba has to be your best player in another series, and Gordon Hayward needs to be your best player in another series, and Jaylen Brown needs to be your best player in another series. You have 4 rounds in the NBA playoffs. Maybe each round has to be a different guy that steps up to be your best player. And the Celtics at least have that capability if it comes down to that. After the break, Pat Beverly and I have a stare down, plus some other rules changes that have to happen. It's next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
Down the stretch of this game, I said, wow, Patrick Beverly and Marcus Smart are just taking turns making these insane hustle plays. This is amazing to watch, because in a game where Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are the headliners, and Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum are having these amazing impacts on the game, it's Patrick Beverly and Marcus Smart who are making the biggest impact on these games, that it's Patrick Beverley who decided, you know what, we're down six, and I'm going to start playing the most insane defense that you've seen. And Marcus Smart saying, oh yeah, well, watch this. And just going back and forth. And I thought, you know what? This is where two warriors respect one another. And just from my own personal experiences. Now, obviously, I've never been an NBA player. I'd never claimed to be. But when I was playing basketball in college and a little bit overseas, my favorite, my absolute favorite thing was when somebody in the other team rose to the challenge and we battled. And no matter how much shit we talked at one another, no matter how many elbows were thrown, no matter how many shots we took, it was all in the heat of battle and in order to win the game. And after the game, whenever I had a battle like that, that person was the first person I sought out and said, you know what? Great game. Because that's what I want. I always wanted the other person's best. And I always had respect for a person who would come at me with that level of ferocity, because I was always going to come at you with that same level. And if you and I just clashed, and if you won, then tip of my hat to you. I gave it my best, you gave it your best, and you came out on top. Shouts to you, my man. You got me on this one. Like, that's all I could ever ask. So I had that mentality. I thought Marcus and Bev, that was going to be the thing. Like, that was going to be the crux of my story. Mutual respect, two warriors. Well, Marcus Smart gave Patrick Beverley some respect after the game. But after the game, I went into the Clippers locker room specifically to ask Patrick Beverley about Marcus Smart. I tweeted the video. So if you haven't followed me, if you're not following me, it's Reds_Army_John on Twitter. I tweeted it out, and you can hear me ask the question. And the question I sort of asked was, what was it like to be out there with Marcus Smart, and you guys were trying to like out-intense one another just to make these plays over and over again? And he just kind of stared at me for a second. Now, we're in a scrum, so I couldn't let it sit there for too long because somebody else was going to hop in and ask a question. So after like a second and a half, I kind of sort of continued my question to say, there aren't many people who are out there that are going to match your intensity out there in the court. Now, you can hate Pat Beverley if you want, but he's an intense dude. I thought that was fair. And he laughed at the question and said, that's funny. And so the scrum goes on. And afterwards, he said, okay, thanks everybody. Have a good day. And then he continues as he's tying his shoes and goes, match my intensity. Okay. Like, you don't see that part in the video. So the recorders are off and everybody's walking away. So I ask him again, and I said, do you object to the premise of the question? Now, I wasn't recording at the time. There was he could have easily said whatever he said. A PR person could have said, that's off the record. I wasn't recording. So I asked him, do you object to the premise of the question? And he just didn't say a word. So I don't know what is in his head. I want to say that shout out to Patrick Beverley, because he changed the game. And it was when Patrick Beverley decided that he was going to make defensive plays that his offense took off. And the Clippers don't win that game at all. They don't even come close without Patrick Beverley. But at the same time, that response to the question, I thought it was a fair question. and the insinuation that somehow Marcus Smart's not on his level. Like, dude, that's I get the ego, I get the whole thing, but like, that's way off base. And a little respect for the people who are asking the question. I just, whatever, whatever. I thought it was funny, to be honest with you. And this isn't like I'm actually laughing. Me and my hot wife are laughing at this, like the internet thing. I'm amused when players or coaches kind of try to burn the media, but I'm very interested in the whole Patrick Beverley kind of response there. I'll leave it at that, whatever it is. The other thing that I want to bring up is a couple of rules things. Actually, I want to bring up the clear path foul thing, because there was a play late in the game where Beverley fouled, I want to say it was Robert Williams, who was kicking it up to Kemba, who was on a break. Kemba was so clearly ahead of the play, but I think my interpretation of the rule is because there was a defender between Rob and the basket when Beverley fouled him, that it's not a clear path foul, even though the ball had gotten away and the player to whom the ball was being passed, Kemba Walker, was far ahead of the play, that there were no defenders between him and Kemba, and that Kemba, by virtue of just catching the ball, could take one dribble and lay it in, was prevented of doing so because of the foul. To me, that's a clear path foul. That a player up ahead of the play got the ball. Yeah, there was a defender technically at midcourt, but not in between the two offensive players, had no bearing on the play. He may as well not have even existed in that moment. But by the letter of the law, technicality, he was a defender between the player and the basket as the foul was committed, and thus not a clear path foul. I do not understand why this is allowed by the NBA, and not just because it happened to the Celtics. In any situation like this, it's stupid, because the whole point of basketball, the whole point of the entertainment value of basketball, is to have plays like this. The NBA is trying to shorten games, and the NBA, by virtue of allowing this rule, is extending games. Now, it doesn't happen very often, so I'm being a little bit dramatic about that. But anytime it happens, the ball stops. Invariably, there is a review. And then the ball comes side out of bounds, and they add minutes to the game. This should be eliminated. That type of play should just be eliminated. Whenever there's a foul taken to stop a fast break, that should just be two shots on the ball. When the opportunity is there for a team to get out on the fast break and a foul is taken, that European foul to stop the ball and get the ball out of bounds on the side, just give them two shots on the ball. And yeah, for maybe a half a season, that might result in some calls where like it's a little bit confusing, but eventually what's going to happen is those guys are going to stop fouling in those situations. And what's going to happen is fast breaks are going to happen and people are going to get cool dunks and the play is going to continue and there won't be stoppages. And it's just ridiculous to watch a team have to stop, review, get the ball out of bounds. Like that's just, terrible. Let the game flow. Let it happen. So that's my little rant about those fouls. Again, I'll say if it was reversed and it was the Celtics who fouled to stop a Clippers fast break, this is the exact same way, I'd say the exact same thing. Because my allegiance is to basketball first. And everybody wants to see that play. No one wants to see that stoppage, the side out of bounds. Everybody wants to see the fast break. Okay? That would have been an exciting moment in the game. So that's my little rant on that. Okay. Before I go, I want to say thanks to at Smiley Jogger on Twitter and all of the other fans who are out there on the road, especially who want to say hi and who I've met. I had a few people, and I just want to express how super cool this is to me to have people in Celtics jerseys in opposing cities. To go to LA and walk down the street and have somebody say, hey, I love the podcast. Like, yeah, it sounds like a humble brag. It is totally a humble brag. But like, it's also kind of unfathomable to me that that is happening. And to be in Staples, to be talking to some friends of mine from college who live in LA and have somebody come up and say something, like, that's amazing. For people on Twitter to want to meet at a game, before a game, I love it. So anytime any of you want to say hi, if you're at a game, DM me. My DMs are open. Try to arrange to find a place to meet. All I got to tell you is I can never meet after a game. After a game is impossible. Halftime is possible for sure. Pre-game is iffy, depending on my work schedule, but if I'm writing a certain thing or not. After the game, it's not going to happen because as soon as the game is over, I'm running to the locker room, talking to Brad, talking to the players. So I can't, by the time I'm free, it's hours past the game. But I just want to express my thanks to everybody who wants to meet, that is a listener or a reader or whomever. It's super, super, super cool. So thanks, and always, always try to come say hi. Tell me where you are. I'll tell you where I am, whatever. So thank you very much. That's the podcast. I'll be honest with you. This is the third Thursday podcast. Friday podcast is, I'm questionable for the Friday podcast. Traveling to Denver in the middle of the day, and I'll be in Denver at 7:30, 8 o'clock Denver time, which is 10, 11 o'clock, whatever it is, Boston time. And quite honestly, my voice is taking a pounding. So I'm going to try to do a Friday show. If I don't, please understand. Maybe I'll try to do one over the weekend after we get home or something to make up for it. But subscribe to the podcast. I hope you, if you are a new listener, I hope you enjoy the show enough to subscribe. All of you regular listeners, very much appreciate the commitment. And hope you are really enjoying what we're trying to do here, what I'm trying to do here. So a five-star rating, a good written review, and share the podcast. Tell everybody. Listen to the Lockdown Celtics podcast here on the Lockdown Podcast Network.